Hey there, church planners. This is Robert Frazier with the Church Planner Podcast. Our Wednesday episodes have been on a little bit of a hiatus, but we're coming back this month. We're excited about it. We have a really incredible opportunity that I just wanted to step in today at the beginning of the episode to share with you all that you won't want to miss. We're partnering with our friends at the New Thing Network to offer the very first Reproducing Churches Catalyst starting January 25th. Peyton and I helped create some of the content and will be leading through this cohort. This is an 8-week process that helps you as a leader build a plan to become a church that plants churches. This course is a part of the Movement System, a series of catalysts that New Thing has developed to help leaders multiply on every level, from disciples to leaders to churches to networks to movements. Here's the thing, we're doing this as a gift. Totally free to help you see your church start planting more churches. You can sign up at churchplanterpodcast.com/RCC, or you can click the link on our Instagram bio. And if you need more info, you can reach out with a DM on our Instagram account at churchplanterpodcast, or you can drop me a note at Bobby C. Frazier, F-R-A-Z-I-E-R. Would love to connect. Now for this week's show. I'll start. My name is Rod, and I like to party.
So you mean whiskey?
What?
You're saying it weird.
Saying what weird?
All of it.
Where do you get off?
All right. Hey there, church planters. You made it to another Wednesday edition of the Church Planter Podcast with your hosts, Bobby Frazier and Matt T. Turcotto. I think I added an extra T in the middle.
You did. You definitely added it. You can actually, Matt Turcotto. Matt T. Buckets works, but Matt T. Turcotto is awkward.
As we're talking, I'm realizing I don't know what your middle name is. Like, that's the real awkwardness of that.
Yeah. It's J.
Like the letter J?
Yeah. It's just Matt J. No, it's Matthew John Turcotto. John. But never Matt John.
MJT. Like John. Just like DJT, man.
DJT, like the
Donald John Trump.
Oh, just like him. Yeah, you got it. No, Matthew John Turcotto. Yeah, MJT is my screen name for most gaming. MJT, and then my birthday. So,
okay, you know, I did see. Funny enough, I didn't think we'd get into Donald Trump today, but it just kind of came to us.
I saw one of those podcasts.
People are saying he has a Ozempic face. Have you seen these?
Oh, I haven't, but I did see he was losing weight. So,
which, you know, this article basically said either Donald Trump changed his personality and learned self-control, or he's on Ozempic. I'll let you choose what you think. And I said, I mean, I'm
either
not going to bet
he's
either
cheeseburgers.
Way. Either way, he's either just way. Like, you know what? It's working. I know that people are like saying Ozempic is this, you know, wonder drug, but have you ever seen something work this well and not have lasting effects? Like, I'm just waiting for the other shoe to drop on this one.
Oh yeah, well, and it's early on still, but it's just like it's just surefire. You just my brother, he has some heart issues, and so they have him on it to control his weight, because, and so I was like, okay, what does that look like? And so I was thinking about reaching out to him and asking him kind of what his experience has been. Because I just can't imagine a injection and then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I'm just not hungry. And
yeah. Well, so you and I, we just started like a new weight loss contest as well with some of our friends.
Yeah.
We have this face or this messenger group that we have had for a couple of years now, 3 or 4 years, if I'm correct. And it's called Naked and Optimistic is the name
of the
text message chain.
That's the goal.
When you get on the scale every morning, you're naked and optimistic, and hopefully that number is falling. So sometimes I'll be in a meeting and I'll have 200 messages from Naked and Optimistic. And fortunately, my wife knows who that is because she's on the text.
She's
chain.
In it. But although we used to, our previous name was just Fat Club.
Just Fat Club, and then Fat Club 2. Actually, there was The Secret of the Fat.
The sequel.
The Secret of the Ooze, actually, is what we should say.
Yeah.
Okay, so we're 2 days into our weight loss. Do we need to do Ozempic like drug testing for our
Here's the
new
deal.
do we trust each other
I
enough for
will tell
this?
you, I did Google the cost, and it is not a net positive to do
It's
it. You would
prohibitively
lose money even with the weight
expensive.
loss
Hold on,
competition. So
how much is Ozempic? Like what are we talking
it's I
cost-wise?
was saying like $860 a month, which is a lot. But if you lose 500 or if you lose 50 pounds in 2 months, I don't know. Is it worth $1,600 to someone? Probably. If you're famous and you make your money by being skinny.
Being skinny, yeah. I mean, like I'm, yeah, there has to be something. There's just nothing that's that good, right? That just makes you not want to eat.
I
There
haven't
has
found
to
it.
be another shoe, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Oh, you're saying, yeah, another
Should I just
effect.
start saving up for Ozempic? Is that the plan?
Yeah, no, so our previous weight loss competitions, the famous Ozempic face, I've had it before. There's
You
other ways to
have.
get that face.
Yeah,
And
it's by sweating.
one of them is called it's actually just an eating disorder.
Yeah,
So our
it's the
last weight,
wrestler's eating
our
disorder.
biggest weight loss competition, I lost 50 pounds in 3 months by limiting my caloric intake to a net negative every day and running 26 miles every weekend. So the bad news is, if you were looking at this, I didn't keep it off.
That's not sustainable, really. That's not
Yeah,
sustainable.
turns out it's not. I mean, I slowly, gradually made my way back up to this weight over a year. So but yeah, I think that's the hard part about it. Like, if you gave me Ozempic for 2 months, it's like, great, I can get it off. It's the lifestyle change of keeping it off or just continue taking a drug for the rest of your life. That doesn't seem sustainable either, unless
No,
that drug
that does
is
not seem
my
sustainable.
cholesterol medication. So
And then you're like, actually, that will save
I
my
can't show that
life.
one. I
That's
have to keep taking. So yeah.
worth it. All right. Well, if you're new to the Church Planner podcast, this is actually a normal first part of the podcast where we
Yeah.
spend 15 minutes on Smack Talk, just messing around. We have a few minutes left, and I really wanted to get into the important stuff, which is obviously NBA playoffs, right? Like
Oh, they're here. Yeah,
this is
they're
what we need to
great.
talk about.
It's been great so far.
So,
I've watched a couple games.
yeah, the Celtics took down a bucket list Heat last
Yeah.
night.
Yeah.
And of
The
course, it
not
is
the other buckets.
the other
The other
buckets,
buckets.
the
Yeah.
Jimmy buckets, not
Jimmy
Matt
buckets, the
T
better buckets.
buckets. Which I'm so glad they got them in the first round and they're like the
Yeah.
20th best team in the NBA because they've been the
Yeah.
scourge of the Celtics' existence in the Eastern Conference Finals.
Sure.
So
Yeah.
I'm
Yeah,
happy
I would
that they're.
say I expect Boston to roll through the playoffs and make it to the finals.
They
And but I've
should,
expected that the
certainly.
last couple of years. So
Well, they
that's the
made it to
concern.
two out of the last four finals, didn't they?
Sure. I'm sorry. I expect them to make it to the NBA finals.
Didn't they make it to two of the last four NBA finals, or just
Yeah.
one?
Oh yeah. I think just one.
Okay,
I don't know.
okay.
You know better than me.
I know. Well, I gotta think back. When you follow such good teams, it's hard to keep track of how many
Yes.
conference championships they win. You know all those
Yeah, yeah,
things.
yeah. Yep. It's rough lately. I
Okay.
mean, you.
Well, let's talk about the West because I have
Sure.
no idea who's going to win the West. Like
Yeah.
LeBron could go on a run and the Lakers could win it at this point.
I'll tell you, for anybody that doesn't know the history of Matt Torquato's NBA sports fandom, I don't follow a team. I follow a player. The first section of my life, I followed Steve Nash, so I was a Suns fan. As he retired, I took the torch over and I've been a LeBron James fan for the last apparently 20 years. That's crazy. And I am in the
That lasted a
process
while.
now of transitioning
Oh,
to,
really?
yeah, I don't know, yeah, of to transitioning my NBA fandom, I should say that, to Victor Wembanyama. So I'm excited to have a young up-and-comer that I'm going to
Okay.
be a fan of. But with all of that said, I'm not a buyer on the Lakers making it out of the first round. Nuggets are too
No.
good. So, but I would say this, the bottom half of that of the West bracket is like the group of death because you got Phoenix and Minnesota, Lakers, which I don't think that the Nuggets are going to be, but the Nuggets are going to have a hard path in, and I think Oklahoma City is going to just walk through the top bracket. It's going to be pretty easy for them. So I
Well,
would
wasn't
expect OKC, Denver in the Western Conference Finals, and I would guess that Denver's going to beat them.
I thought, wasn't Minnesota in the top
Minnesota's a three
four?
seed, so
Three
they should
seed.
be in
Yeah,
the
I was
bottom
gonna say.
half.
Honestly, that's a team to me that is dangerous.
I
Like I
really like watching Anthony Edwards play. He's
No, he's
so much fun to watch.
Yeah.
If I
No,
was
I'm hoping he
if
makes
I
it deep.
you know me and my our mutual friend Joe Pavlish went through a pretty rigorous rubric to choose my next team to be a
Oh,
fan of, or to
okay.
be, and
Was it between Minnesota
one
and
of the
it?
criteria was young, up and coming, fun to watch teams, and Wembanyama helped out with that. Joe was trying to convince me to be a Portland Trailblazers fan because Scoot Henderson was going to be so good, and it seems
That's
like
a tough sell.
that
That's
was
a tough
wishful thinking.
sell.
I mean, it was before he played a single game. So, but yeah, but Minnesota was in there, and I mean, I'll tell you, as somebody who doesn't have like a team that I follow, this has been the last 3 years have been so fun watching just good basketball because it was like
Oh,
it felt like
yeah.
it was always like the West is good and the East is down, and then the East got good and the West was down, and now it just feels like both conferences are good, and there's a really good couple teams in each conference. So,
Well, it feels like there's more parity in basketball than there's been in a long time, where you've got the top 10 teams can play well, and you actually could believe that more than a few teams could be in the finals, which
And
is a
there's
lot of
like,
fun.
even though there's like big threes or big trios, like there isn't like a huge super team. Like Denver's good because they drafted two good young players that got good. And, you know, Oklahoma City's good because they have a bunch of young players that are good. And Boston's good because I'll give them credit. They drafted well and they've made, I don't know how they keep winning on every freaking trade they ever do, but they've just been doing that. So it's
Yeah.
like there's
Have
not like
you
this
looked
like
at
collection of people who are like, oh, we're all gonna go to this team and be great and be, you know, so.
I mean, to me, Brad Stevens might be the best GM in the league right now because he
I'd
took
buy that.
over for Danny
Oh.
Ainge and has
And did
and
better.
just killed it. The last 5 years, you're like, oh my gosh, how did they? And then they brought in like two great coaches, two young,
Getting Drew
gripping
Holiday
coaches.
was ridiculous. It was just a
Oh.
ridiculous move.
No, how did that happen? No one knows.
I don't
And
know.
even Porzingis coming in was like
Yeah.
another. You like every time you look over, it gets better.
I was not sold on Porzingis still having anything in him, but he's turned out well.
Honestly, yeah, he's outplayed his value, which is,
I like to think that
yeah.
I'm a Boston hater, but I can also be a realist in all
Yeah.
facets except that Tom Brady is a system quarterback. So
That's a
that's
Peyton
the one
Manning.
holdout
That's
I
a
have.
Colts fan coming out right
I don't know. It's a fan of.
there.
It just feels like when all those other backup quarterbacks came in and kept winning, it's like, well, maybe the quarterback's not that good.
Did you watch the Dynasty yet?
I haven't.
Oh
I'm not
man.
gonna waste part of my life watching a documentary on the
Oh
worst season
man.
of my life. And when I say
No,
season, I
no.
mean 8 year
20 years.
span of my
It was
life.
18 years. Honestly, I
So.
learned a bunch of stuff that I didn't know that I had, like I was too young to even like see. So, I mean, yeah, it was good. If
I
you
didn't
want a
see
great
it, but I
show,
felt it.
you felt all the
One
losses.
of
I can imagine that.
Ketty's worst days of every year was when the Colts got eliminated from the playoffs. And the only thing that was worse than that was the years that the Colt or the Patriots would win Super Bowls.
Well,
I literally took an anger walk once where it was the year that Atlanta
oh,
just
the
completely
20-3.
bungled it.
Oh
Yeah. So we
man.
left Ketty's mom's house at
Oh
halftime and I
man.
was feeling great. We were gonna go home, watch the rest of the game, and then she just watched me get angrier and angrier and
Angrier.
angrier, and then overtime, and then finally the game ends, and she's like, so, and I was like, I'm leaving. And I literally went on like a 4 mile walk, just walking around our neighborhood, like and I
Yeah,
deleted the ESPN and podcast apps off. I took
we
them off my phone. I was like, I'm going social media dark for the next 4 days because I will not listen
so
to
mad.
these talking heads talk about how freaking great Tom Brady is for another minute.
Well,
So,
you know what I realized watching the Dynasty is that it could have even been worse because with literally three plays going the opposite direction, Tom Brady has 10 Super Bowl wins in 20 years. Like
yeah.
when you think about that level of dominance, Is there
So what
any
was
other
the
sport in
topic that
any
we
other
were going to
time?
do for today for the Church Planner podcast, Robert? Remind me. I think that we hit our 15-minute max
It's
2 minutes ago. So we'll just go back and cut that section out.
time for this week's topic. Okay, so today we are talking about ministry for the long haul, how to focus on a slow burn for impact when we're planting. So,
What just
do you ever
happened?
do that? Oh, there you go. You can do
What's
these hand
going
signals
on?
where things happen on Zoom. If you're watching on
That
YouTube, you
is,
saw
I've never done that,
a
and
fireworks
it
show. You
was
haven't done that?
very strange to me that that
It's
just happened.
in the new iOS. Do you have the new or the new Mac
Okay.
OS?
No, that's wild.
Okay,
So whenever
so
you do this, it's
anyways,
going to do a thumbs up.
it does like a something.
Like
Yeah,
a
there you go, a
bubble.
bubble.
There it
Yeah,
is.
there you
Oh,
go.
wow.
So if you watch on YouTube, you just got to see a little bubble. When you make a thumbs up, it makes a bubble on the new Mac OS.
Right.
So today, I really want to talk about this because we started church planting network here in the Treasure Valley. It's called the City Network, almost 8 years ago. And that's been a really important part of what's happened in our city. We've seen 77 church plants over the last 8 years in a valley of 800,000 people. So some really significant church planting. So we've seen a lot. I've walked with a lot of guys through church planting, and that's one of the reasons why we love doing this podcast is there's so much we've learned by being a part of so many stories. And what I've seen is every church planter comes into town, I sit down with them pretty early in their process. Sometimes it's a Zoom meeting, sometimes it's a lunch when they come in for a vision trip. And I sit down with these church planters, and they're so excited, and they have all these plans and dreams, and you want to stoke that. You don't want to rain on that parade. You want to like build that up because they're going to need that fire, right? Because stuff's going to happen. A mentor of mine once told me, "The world's going to beat people up. You don't need to do it." And so, in general, I try not to rain on people's parades, even when I think they have bad ideas, mostly because they'll figure that out, because
Yeah.
things won't work out. So you can kind of let those things happen.
Life will tell them it's a bad idea. You don't have to do that.
Right?
Or maybe you're just not a great judge of ideas. And in that case, why would you want to
Well, yeah, you hate
rain
to
on
be the
someone's
guy
parade?
where they're trying to prove you wrong. Like you're like,
Yeah.
"Great, I'm glad you were
This
wrong.
Bill Bright guy's got this idea to reach college students. Nah, that'll never work.
No, that'll never work." 75 years later, 20 million people, you're like, "Yeah, maybe. We'll see."
It was the Holy Spirit.
God will do things even with bad
Yeah.
ideas. That's
There
why
you
you
go.
really can't bet on the ideas, because God
That's a
does
good
stuff.
call.
Anyways, so I'll sit with these church planters, and they'll tell you their ideas, and they're all excited. And then there's a moment where what I'll tell them is, "Listen, I'm really excited you're gonna come. I think we need church planters like you. I think we need churches like the one God's like birthing in your heart and just bringing to life. But what I want to ask you is, if your church doesn't grow, if your church doesn't thrive, will you stay and invest in our city as a missionary to help reach lost people, even if your church doesn't go well?" And they all know the right answer. The right answer is, "Of course, I'm here for Boise. I'm here for your city. I want to invest in this place." But more often than not, if things are underwhelming, if there's difficult seasons, if the church struggles financially, or it's taking longer than they think it should, over the course of about 3 to 5 years, what most church planters from other places will do is they'll pull the ripcord. They'll grab it and they'll pull, and they'll say, "You know what? I think God's calling me back home to go to wherever that place was that they came from, because it's easier and they've got babysitters there and housing's cheaper and there's some job at a church that they can take that will help them kind of make it through this next season, because they feel like it just didn't happen. It didn't happen the way they imagined it." And what I want to tell them all is, actually, you missed out on the best part, because the most impact that we see of every church in our valley is the guys between 7 and 20 years. That's the place where the impact happens. And most people miss out because they don't wait that out. They don't wait to see it happen, and they miss out on it. And so, like, the way that we sp spell impact is T-I-M-E, time. There's this power to it. When we were planting, I read a book. If I think of the name of the author, I will mention him. I think it was Alan Briggs. The name of the book is Staying is the New Going. And back in the day, especially in the mid-2000s, there was this very vagabond kind of mentality. Everybody wanted to go somewhere and do something important. And what we've realized in our world is that a world of transience is actually really bad for people and it's really bad for places.
Yeah. Can I ask a question? You told me
Sure.
to ask
Yeah.
questions
Jump
more.
over.
I'm gonna
Yeah,
try.
let's do it.
So I guess there's some natural pros that jump out to me, but from that like perspective, I guess I never really think of like church planters oftentimes are people going to a new space. So what's the I think I can think of like some benefits of like, okay, like if I wanted to plant a church, I wouldn't do it in Meridian, Idaho because there's people that know me here and it'd be harder. And then my friends would, I'd be like trying to get my friends to come to a church that they'd have to leave their churches. But like, what's the kind of prevailing thought behind like go somewhere and plant a church versus like plant the church where you are? Or I guess what percentage is you talking through new church planters? Like more often than not, they're coming to Boise from somewhere else. I think like I've seen locally for us, church plants have been successful when it's like a church is sending another, a part of their body to plant a church locally. It's like, okay, that feels a little bit different, but like, why go somewhere to plant a church? I mean, if God calls you, that makes sense, but it seems like that more often than not, people are kind of going to a new place to do that. What's the ideology behind that or the benefits?
I'd say here locally, we probably have a pretty close to a 50-50 split between people who are planting from here and people who are planting from somewhere else here. So I've definitely seen both. Both can have incredible impact, but almost none of it happens in the first 3 to 5 years. And there's a couple of reasons for that. So I like when people go to new places because they see it differently. Like when you go to a new place, you don't know the limitations and you don't know the problems. And so you're more optimistic about what could be. And you don't get stuck in boxes. When you live in a place, you can think of a reason not to do something, or you can think of someone who would hate it. But that doesn't mean you shouldn't do it. There's like a someone in your mind that's kind of holding you back. So I don't mind going to new places. And even what
Yeah,
I would say,
the
because I
places need pla like th there are going to be places that need new people. So I think
Yeah.
that part makes sense to me. It's like, oh, like I'm going to plant a church in an area where there are no churches because that place needs them. But like I think that makes sense if you feel like there's this calling, or like if it's like, hey, I never thought I was going to plant churches, but it feels like God's calling me to this particular area and he's given me a heart for that, and so we're going to go plant a church there. But if it like is that kind of generally the sense that church planters have, is like I feel this calling to plant a church and I feel the calling to the city? Or is it like, or in your experience, is it more like, oh, like there's a need here, so maybe I'll just go meet that need? I think for like in a
Yeah.
real world example, like sometimes it feels like a church born out of a church because there's a need. We've got a ton of people in Meridian, so it's like if ever there were a day where it's like, hey, Redemption Hill needs a new church and Meridian needs churches, I don't know if we do or not, but like that would make sense where it's like, hey, there's this sending. But like I guess I've never put my mind in the like in the headspace of a church planter. Like in that process, God was going to work however he works, but like do you more so often see people feeling like God's calling me to plant a church and I don't know where, and then he gives and then they figure out a place? Or is it like, oh, like they have a heart for, I've got this
Yeah.
heart for, Alabama, and now, oh, God's calling me to plant a church in Alabama. I don't, does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, there's a couple things in there. The first is there are places that have a lot more people who go to church here in America. Regionally, when you look at the Midwest and the South, it's closer to 20, 25% of people have real connection with some local congregation. And it tends to be evangelical or Protestant, and they're connected somewhere. Now, when we look at here in the Northwest, it's one of the least church places. The Northeast, the Northwest, the West Coast are kind of the least church areas. And then, yeah, the large cities in the West tend to be very unchurched. Our valley, we think about 7% of the Treasure Valley is in a gospel church in a given week. Only 12% call themselves any sort of Protestant, and only 44% have any religious identity at all, which was one of the lowest percentages in the country. And so people come here because we actually need people to join us in the mission. And that's one of the things we tell people when they show up is, we need you. Like I've got 15 areas in my city that don't have a meaningful church presence within a few miles of their house, where 50, 25, 100,000 people live and don't have deep connections with church. And then if you took everyone in the valley, every single church seat in the valley, we'd have a hard time fitting 15% of the whole valley in a church in a given week. And so there's like a deep need. So like there's the need factor, and then there's the calling factor where you say, you know what? I love that place and I feel like called and equipped to go there. You know, I think some people look at the fastest growing places. You know, they look at those lists on Fortune magazine of the most livable areas or the fastest growing areas, and they choose you because of that.
Sure. Who wouldn't want
So there's like reason to it.
right, quick follow-up to that one. Because I don't know, and maybe this is the case. Do you find most church planters are like, I know you're super analytical and you just rattle off three statistics about the Treasure Valley because that's you and you know. But like, I guess if you had asked me as somebody who lives in Boise, like, does Boise have enough churches? It's like, well, yeah, there's a lot of churches. And I know that like if somebody was saying, hey, I'm interested in going to church, I th there's four or five churches that I would probably feel comfortable recommending to them. And so do you think that like that, like even in that example, like I wouldn't have probably without knowing you, I wouldn't have said like, oh, the Treasure Valley feels like it doesn't have enough churches. It's like, oh, we've got a few big churches and we've got a bunch of smaller churches and there's a place that fits in there. But like, is that the church, the typical church planter's mindset is like, go where the need is because Boise's underchurched, or is it like, I guess what's that filter for people who are kind of like trying to figure out where they're going to plant or what they're going to look at? Because
You
like
know
it'd
what?
be great to move to a place that has a low cost of living and housing and is ne next to the mountains and you can go skiing. I think Boise is a great place to plant a church and it's the ideal place for me because I love Boise. But if you don't have that, where are you figuring that out? What are the lenses that you're using for that?
Well, and here's where there's market dynamics at play in every single type of either social or business endeavor. And those market dynamics have to do with demand and supply. But there's not a linear relationship between demand and supply. They don't always go in the same direction and they don't always correlate to one another. And what we're talking about is not starting new churches, which is so that we have enough places for Christian people to go to church. That's actually an old school, like denominational type of thinking where they say, well, we know that there's 400 people who are Presbyterian in the Treasure Valley, so we're going to start a congregation so that those people have a place to be Presbyterians. That was the type of an analysis that was happening in the 50s and 60s. Or they'd say, well, there's no presence of the, you know, Christian church or the, you know, Disciples of Christ in that area, so we're going to start something so that there's the presence of our denomination in that space. What we're talking about is people being sent to a place preaching the gospel and seeing a church emerge out of a missionary activity, sharing the gospel, making disciples. And so the church needs to be present in those places so that the mission of God is going forward in those places, not that they need a place to meet and worship. So that there's like a, you know, a very subtle but very important shift where we're talking, and most church planters actually don't understand those
I was going to
distinctions.
ask that. Is that a distinction that you feel like when you sit down with new church planters that they're, or like, even for me, as somebody who's been involved in a church plant, like when I think of a church planter, it's like a guy who's going to go to this town in Mississippi and he's going to create a launch team and they're going to find a building and then they're going to, like, that seems like that's what church planning is, but you're talking something else. Do you feel like more or less people that you meet with initially have that kind of vision of what you just said, or is it people who are thinking like this is still the old model of church planting where we just do get some money and then go find a place to meet.
I'd say it's probably 50-50, and it really depends on their church background, the types of books that they've read, the people that they've been influenced by. And really what we're talking about is the difference between more of an attractional model versus a missional model. And both have really important parts to play in the kingdom of God, and we see that even in our valley, that there are attractional churches that do a great job at helping people start their walk with God and deploying people to help reach the lost. Like, we've got a few churches here in town that are great at that. They put on a fantastic experience for people to engage in very, very soft edges. It's easy to start those spaces. They're a little bit more anonymous, maybe larger. They have really phenomenal programs and music, and people can easily start their relationship with God in those spaces. And they're really powerful, attractional churches. A missional church is more focused on how are we deploying and sending people as missionaries into the world. And so we need both. We need like a very attractional model that still works. And we also need people who are raising up laborers to be missionaries in their neighborhoods. Because if, like, when you look in Boise at like keywords like churches near me, and you try to serve ads to those people, it's really expensive because there aren't that many people searching for churches. It's actually a very low percentage of people are saying, gosh, it's Sunday morning, I need to have a place to go to church. Almost no one does that. And so when we're talking about impact, what we're talking about is somebody taking their lives, getting embedded in a place, and then staying long enough so that people trust them, people listen to them, people walk in their lives with them, and then the gospel takes root. And what we've seen, I know you've been in your neighborhood for quite a while too, but what we've seen is over 8 years, it'll be 8 years this winter. So 7.5 years we've been in our house. The last year and a half, there's been more gospel opportunities in our neighborhood than ever. And it's because we've stayed, we haven't moved. And like my micro church is now, we're launching with a bunch of people from our neighborhood. And I think the last six or seven families that have joined the church have been from like the West Bench, because they've come to Made for This camp, because they're neighbors of ours, because they've been partnering with our Wonder School, like preschool, and it's very focused on the geography, and there's powerful things that happen over time.
It would seem like, based on those two, like the attractional versus what were the phrases you used,
Missional, yeah.
missional versus, it would seem like the thinking through that like idea of like the long burn or feeling like you kind of have failed. It seems like the attractional one, and correct me if I'm wrong, has more opportunity to feel like after 3 years we kind of plan like we came here to get a bunch, not I mean in good with good reason to have people come and be part of this thing. And it feels like that has more opportunity to feel like you've failed because you can see it every week. It's like, if people aren't here, well, we came here to get people in seats. And if people aren't in seats, then I've not really done my job. And if I haven't done my job, then I should just pack up and leave. Versus like, while you could definitely probably still feel the failures of being missional in a community, and it's like, oh, we thought that what the impact was going to be was that we would see this vibrant community spring up out of this. Maybe that wouldn't be there. It does feel like that would be easier to stay longer into kind of a feeling of like, are we really making the impact that we thought we were going to here? That's maybe I'm wrong in that, but
No,
I.
I think that's interesting. There's a handful of church planning networks and denominational structures. Their training is primarily to start new churches, and so they have very technical ways of helping people do what we call the launch large model, which is they want to have 200 to 250 people at the opening weekend, and then by the end of the first year they want to have doubled that. Like, that's the goal, is to build something. And they do that so that they are financially independent sooner and then are able to contribute to new church plants. And so it's kind of it's a model for financial stability long term. And we've had here in the Valley, I think one of those models has been relatively successful. And most of them, what we've seen even last year, we've had three of those pastors pull the ripcord and go home, because, and here's the thing, all of them had several hundred people join them over 2 or 3 years, which is a very successful church plant in our valley. But in their minds, they thought, well, my benchmarks are 200 at opening, 400 at year one, 1,000 at year five. Like, that's the way they're thinking. And when they get to the point where they're like, this isn't working, I've done all my tricks and I've used all my technical ability and I'm running out of money and I'm going to have to pay it back if I stay. And then they go, gosh, this is really stressful and painful. And my wife doesn't like me very much because I'm never home because I'm so stressed about making sure that we grow this thing through our effort. What happens a lot of times is that we think that putting on the service and making the church a really good experience is actually going to bring people to us. And that can be true. Like, if you do a bad job, people are going to struggle to connect. That's real. But a lot of times they're doing a great job and they're building these deep, beautiful communities, and they can't see the power of God at work because in their mind they're like, I thought we'd be at 500, or I thought we'd be at 1,000, and I'm so disappointed in not becoming something. There's this line in Velvet Elvis, which is an old Rob Bell book, back when it was okay to be Rob Bell fan,
Yeah,
back in the old days.
familiar.
But he's got this little story where he talks about when he launched Mars Hill in this old mall in Grand Rapids, and there's like thousands of people there the first couple of weeks. And he's just overwhelmed with it, and he's going out to preach, and he has a panic attack. And it's because there was this little, what he called a mega church pastor on his shoulder, that was just telling him in his ear that he's got to do a good job or they won't come back. And that he's got to perform for them and take care of all those people. And they're all his responsibility and it's up to him. And what he says he had to do is he had to kill that little mega church pastor in his ear. He had to destroy it so that he could then start serving his people rather than trying to protect himself by fulfilling their expectations. All the stuff that we're doing inside to protect ourselves through performance and by just being good at our job so that we don't have to answer hard questions. When we let go of that, something happens. We're able to enter in fully and participate with joy and experience God in the midst of it, rather than trying to earn his favor by doing a good job. You know what I mean?
Well, then we talked about this earlier. We kind of were joking about it before we started, but the nine in me, the peacekeeper in me, wants to ask, what's the if that's the temptation and the potential burnout for the attractional model, what's that temptation and attract like and potential burnout on the other side? Because like, if you're not measuring yourself against metrics for who's in the seats and how are we growing and what's the giving look like, which I mean, logistically as like an operator, that makes sense to me, where it's like, oh, you can track on a tread on a spreadsheet, are we growing, are we doing better, are we meeting those benchmarks? And so their success is really easy to see or not. If you kind of go the more missional model, like I'm guessing there's a point in a missional model launch where you kind of go like, are we really making the impact, or are we doing what we think? That feels like it's more like of a gut punch. If you're like, oh, I couldn't get 100 people to show up, that makes sense. Oh, like I don't feel like I'm being impactful for the kingdom of God, that feels like it's more dangerous than I couldn't launch a successful megachurch.
Yeah,
So what does that look like?
I've seen several house and micro church models that are very missional, focused on neighborhoods and third spaces, and they're trying to be very deeply embedded in places. And there's a couple things that happen that are going to spell the end of that thing. The first is they're so small that when one or two families leave, it's a death threat to the community. Oh, the thumb worked again.
Nothing like thumbs up and death threat to the community.
but yeah, so you need a critical mass, or like, one or two families have a job transfer and all of a sudden it just kind of falls apart. I've also seen that in small communities they can be very inwardly focused. They gather a critical mass of 20 or 30 people in their house, and it's a beautiful community where they share their lives together. And they say, we don't have any more room in the house, and so we're going to stop inviting people. And that is the end of the church being what it's meant to be. As soon as we say that there's no more room at the table, we've stopped being God's people, because the hospitality of opening our lives and opening our tables and opening our households to others, that's what the people of God are meant to do. And so you have to keep opening your table. You've got to blow out the doors on the house, and then you have to multiply and send. And what happens too often is they wait too long to send, and then it loses its momentum and its spiritual power because it's been too inwardly focused for too long, and then it can't regain that missional impulse. And so you have to stoke that constantly. We've also seen infighting that happens in smaller groups, that where they're so worried to protect what they've created, and there's somebody, maybe a difficult personality within it. They like one difficult personality in 20 people can blow up the whole thing if you don't have a strong leader who's managing that person. So small and missional isn't always great. It can be really difficult and hard. And so it's really mo much more about what kind of leader are you going to be. And here's the antidote to both. To both the mega burnout and pulling the ripcord and walking away, and the missional leader who says, you know what, it's too hard and I haven't figured out how to do it, and so I'm just going to give up. Here it is. You ready? You commit to teaching people the way of Jesus for the rest of your life, no matter what. Whether it's in your house, or it's in a church, or it's in your neighborhood, or it's in your workplace. And the rest of your life, you're going to share the hope you have in Christ, and you're going to teach people to walk in the way of Jesus. And whatever comes of it, God is responsible for the outcome. But you've settled in your heart that that's what I'm going to do, no matter where I am. And once you do that, then it's not as much of a temptation to pull the ripcord and go away, because I've made a covenant in my heart to do this thing God's called me to. And so I don't get out of it by going back to my home in the South or in the Midwest. And I don't get out of it by leaving Boise. I actually have this covenant with God that no matter what, I'm going to have a group of guys or gals around me that I'm going to train in the way of Jesus. And then I'm going to deploy them to go reach and send and help find lost people. And so either way you do it, it really comes down to, in your heart, have you committed long term for impact? And then see what God will do with a life that's on fire for him.
Good.
So that's it, man. That's it today. I
All right. That's
think we're
it.
40 some
Yeah.
minutes in. Not bad.
That's good. All right.
All right.
Then
Next
I then
week.
I then I say the thing.
Oh, yeah. Are you ready? You got it?
Every week I'll get better at it. I'm getting better at it. So one, I'll say one. Thanks for listening. It's awesome. We really appreciate you joining us wherever you're at in that journey, and we hope that, for me, it's been an engaging conversation. It's really fun because I just get to ask the questions that they come naturally, and I hope that they're practical. But we appreciate you spending some time with us. And here we would say that if you want to reach the people that nobody else is reaching, you have to go where nobody else is willing to go and do the work that nobody else is willing to do. And it'll get better every time.
That's it. And
Cool.
if you think Matt can ask better questions, just send them to him, okay?
Do it. Absolutely. Well, and that's
And
the thing is I
what's your
love it.
Instagram handle? Give it to him.
It's at Matthew Turcato, probably.
One T, Matthew.
Just one T in Matthew. It's pulling up right now. Yep, that's it. It's just Matthew Turcato. That's my Instagram handle. Reach out. I'd love to hear about it.
MATHEWTURCATO.
Yeah.
There you go.
Tell
You
me
got it.
the questions that I missed and how I should ask them better, because I me and Robert did talk about this at the beginning. I'm still learning on this, but it has felt more natural, and it's become less of like, oh, I have to try and be good at this, and more of like, oh, I'm just really interested in what somebody who's going through this journey would be thinking. So that's helpful.
All right, man. See you later.
Yep.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. This episode was brought to you by Church Web Builder. If you've been meaning to scrap your terrible WordPress church website, or you just need to actually sit down and make your church plant's website, let this be a sign to you. With Church Web Builder's library of church-specific templates and integrations, and the included all-in-one marketing and communication platform, a beautiful new website is literally sitting there waiting for you to take it. Go to churchwebbuilder.io and use the code PLANTER at checkout. You'll get 50% off your first year. Yes, 50. 50% off your entire first year. Again, go to churchwebbuilder.io and use the code PLANTER. For more from the Church Planter Podcast, hit us up on Instagram and Facebook at Church Planter Podcast and on Twitter at CPlanterMag. We'd love to connect. See you next time.